Okay, this is our 17th shiur in the Sefer Musar Avicha of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. We are on page Samach Hei, 65. Today is the 16th of July, I think the 26th of Tammuz. And we're going to cover some ground today, Bli Neder, as we have in the past, with a little bit of a similar methodology. But just to review, I was actually thinking after last class, we were talking about the Nesiras HaMidos, carving the Midos, not taking along with a positive Midah, a negative Midah as well, and Rav Cook gave some examples of that. I was thinking if you study Tanakh, you see this a lot. The Malbim, for instance, in explaining the Midos of Yosef HaTzadik, in Parshas Vayeshev, when it tells us about his interactions with his brothers, so our sages tell us that, I mean, it's really the Torah almost tells us, but he rebuked them. It also says he aligned himself with the more downtrodden of the brothers, the Bnei HaShvachos, the ones who were mocked a little bit by the children of Leah. The Malbim says, this shows you a person's greatness. If a person is rebuking, he's giving musar to others, but if that's his nature, because he's always a holier-than-thou type, so it doesn't show us his greatness. On the other hand, if a person is always associating with the lowly, people who, in terms of the hierarchy, were considered lower than him, he was the son of Rachel, but if that's because that's his nature, he's always a low spirit, also doesn't show us his greatness. Says the Malbim, though, but here you have Yosef HaTzadik, who at the same time is able to rebuke and be humble. That shows you that both of them were just lishma. They were just the proper midah being applied or applicable, because they're almost opposites. In other words, he wasn't this type of person or that type of person. He used this midah where appropriate and that one where appropriate. So he was drawing on the midos perfectly the way they were supposed to be, not with some sweeping trend toward being rebuking or some sweeping trend toward being too humble. It was applying the Midos properly, which is similar to the concept of Nesiras HaMidos that we've been talking about. I was thinking also the truth is Yitzchak Avinu is the Midah of Gvura, which Rav Cook was talking about. Gvura is usually defined as austerity, harsh. Yet the Mefarshim point out the contrast. Avimelech figured out that Yitzchak wasn't married, wasn't a sister to Rivka, because he saw them mitzachek. We don't know exactly what it means, but in some way Yitzchak was being lighthearted with Rivka, and Avimelech wasn't supposed to see it, but he was snooping. But the point is, when you read that, it doesn't sound like Yitzchak's character. If we envision a Yitzchak who's a bal gvura, means a harsh, overly serious personality, and then you see he's metzachek, he's engaging in levity. The answer is because that's my gvura that I'm thinking of, an uncarved and improperly developed gvura. Yitzchak Avinu had the midah of gvura, but that didn't mean he was a harsh personality. He may have been a soft personality at the same time, but he had the midah of gvura, which is what Rav Cook was talking about. I'm sure there are other examples you can think of and you can discover in Tanakh and in all of our Svarim. So we're on page Samach Hei. In the paragraph before Gimel, he was talking about Ga'ava, arrogance, haughtiness, and this is a very important discussion. You'll see he's going to continue with it, because Anivus, humility, is not just a nice trait. It's a central trait. It's almost a starting point in much of Avodas Hashem. So Rav Cook, from the discussion of Nesiras HaMidos and talking about you do need Gvura, but he said, but we don't need Gaiva, and he's going to talk about the difference between them. So he gets into a discussion of Gaiva in general. In that last paragraph that we learned last time, he says, and in the paragraph before it, he says that in order to properly address Midos, you have to really diagnose them carefully. He said you have to see where they come from, just like in the physical world, there are elements and compounds, and if you want a scientist who really wants to know, if you want to come up with a proper vaccine, or you have to know how the thing works, you have to know the science of it. to really understand our own midos, we have to see where is it coming from. You can't just take a general superficial look. You have to really dissect it. He said it's hard even to know, even with careful study, it's hard to know necessarily everything that's there, just as a scientist can analyze something and I know there's some of this in here and some of that, but I'm not sure what the other 8% is. That can happen in midos also. But he did give us four ingredients that are always part of gaiva. One is a great narcissism, a great love of self. The second one was a delusion that he's able to multiply manyfold whatever good he finds in himself. The third, which was that he deludes himself into thinking that if he imagines something about himself, it will be that way. People can get carried away with a fantasy about their greatness, and after a while, and they get used to that process, they start to live that way. People can live in their own bubble of self-aggrandizement. And the fourth is just generally has a misperception of what's true and what's non-existent, what's false in the world. Now, I'm just reviewing that because the next section, which is Gimel, bottom of page Samach Hei, he elaborates on this. What I'm going to do here is similar to what we did last week or the week before. We're going to go on the express train for a moment here. I'm feeling the exigency, the urgency of getting through this safer. And this section, I think the idea of it, I think I can express properly. Some of the details, the way he puts things, I'm not exactly sure why he is using those terms. Maybe you can help me with it. So what I'd like to do is summarize what he says in this section at Gimel. So we're gonna do this Eiser Veinig, as they say in yeshivas. It's outside. I'm gonna summarize it, and I think I wouldn't say it to you if I didn't think it was largely accurate. But I do think there are certain nuances that I'm not sure exactly what he means. So he's diagnosing where a person who is drawn to gaiva, to arrogance, where does it come from? And he points out an interesting pasuk. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says, "Haya teres geyus shikori Ephraim." It talks about people who have the crown of arrogance, and he refers to them as the shikurim, the drunken ones. It says Rav Kook that haughtiness, gaiva, and drunkenness have a common root. They come from the same problem, really. Now, to explain that, he develops the following idea. I'm putting it in my own terms. Life has meaning when a person has an awareness of life. I'm aware of my existence. Life has fuller meaning when a person has a broader, not just aware of himself, but he has an awareness, experiences things outside of himself. That makes for a broader life. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu inculcated within man the yearning to broaden his life. We're supposed to. That's part of a basic human yearning. If a person doesn't have that, God forbid, it's a disorder. A person wants to have a rich life, a rich existence. I'm really going to put this in my own terms, but I think this is what he means. Essentially, people are looking, he doesn't use the word stimulation, but I'll use that word. People are looking for stimulation, for something engaging in life. He uses different terminology, which is what makes it difficult. But people are looking for stimulation. The Baal Gaiva has a correct yearning, but he does it wrong. The person who taps into MS, into truth, can at the same time realize that his own existence is small. It's minuscule, but thrive and almost be on a high from the awareness of that great existence outside of himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm small. I'm not anything. I'm a beria pu'uta, tiny creature, only created by the chesed of Hashem. I have no real independent existence. But that doesn't depress him. The awareness of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that he made man the only creature who through his free will can actually, quote-unquote, improve God's world. Not improve beyond what Hashem wants, but Hashem gave us that ability, he gave us that job. But it's not really myself, it's that which is outside of myself, but I'm able to do his rutzon. That gives him enormous simcha. The Baal Gaiva misses that point. The Baal Gaiva is also looking for stimulation and looking to broaden something outside of himself, but he thinks it has to be within himself. He only feels like he has a broader life if he broadens himself. You know, so the Anav, who has understood MS, I'm this tiny kernel, but I'm relishing the fact that there's this greatness outside of me that I can connect to, that I can be mesiaches to through my actions and through my will. The Balgaiva doesn't get that. He misses that point, and he only feels his life is being broadened, is being expanded, has true value and true meaning if he expands himself. And it's all a delusion, because he's not that great entity that he wants to make himself into. And he uses some terminology here that I'm not sure exactly what it means. Maybe somebody can help me, or maybe I'll figure it out at some point. It's always good when you don't understand something, make a mental note of it. And move on. We have an expression in the yeshivas, for nakasha startmanish. You don't die from a question, you reserve it, save it, click, and then keep it in mind. He says the following. Rav Kook says that anything that is truly thriving according to the emes of Torah and of Hashem's world is really in a state of tranquility. But to the onlooker, it looks like it's in a state of chaos. Anything that is really thriving is in a state of menucha. But it looks like, from the outside, it looks like it's in a state of chaos. I mean, I think people make a much of this in the physical world. If you would look under a microscope and see the molecules, you'd see things bumping around. But look, it's tranquil waters. It's really in a state of tranquility, but if you don't understand it, it looks like it's in a state of movement, of noise, of chaos. He uses the term noise, rash. I don't understand exactly how this applies here, but what he says is that the Balgaiva looks from the outside at what it would be to be thriving, and he thinks it has to be with noise, with stimulation, and he doesn't realize it's not really so. So a person looks for, to broaden his life, he looks for stimulation. So how can he stimulate him? Again, he doesn't really use the word stimulation, he uses a different term, but he says eating and drinking is very fleeting. It's stimulation, but you know, it's gone. Drunkenness is a more prolonged, altered state of being. And he says, therefore, the sochel, the fool, becomes drunk and thinks, I'm on page Samachesna, he thinks he's having an enhanced life. I mean, God forbid, people are substance abusers, so life is boring. Oh, but you get into this state of altered, now life feels very rich, feels very engaging. Says Rav Kook, even that's fleeting. You know, it's a real addiction that's totally delusional? Gaiva. Eating and drinking doesn't last long at all. Even a drunken high doesn't last too long. But gaiva is an ongoing, and it's not dependent on any substance. It's a totally delusional state of being. He thinks he's, by imagining, I'm really great, I'm really something. And if he thinks that way for long enough, it's a self-perpetuating process. That he gets up in the morning and he's aggrandizing himself, and it's all false. It's all not emes. And he says that's why the pasuk in the Navi Yeshaya likens gaiva to drunkenness, to shikrus, because the person is yearning for some stimulation, for something that will broaden his existence. But he just got the wrong thing. You look at a drunken person, he's laughing and he's so happy, but he doesn't have to any person who can perceive things for real. He's just rolling around in the mud. There's nothing good happening. The Balgaiva is the same way. He feels good about it. He feels excited. He feels life has been expanded, but it's all false. His life hasn't expanded. He's missed the mark. And then on the top of, I'll read a little bit from the bottom of page Samaches, to Samachtes, bottom, very last line on Samachtes, v'chol ilui v'kavod sheyavar al demyonu, any elevation and any honor that he can get into his imagination, hakol, at the top of Samachtes now, hakol miyachasam la'atzmo, he attributes them all to himself, kideles aneg aleim, ba'oneg demyonu hakozev, in order to relish in them, to like oneg, to enjoy them in this enjoyment of his deceitful imagination. It's all deceit, it's not true. So whatever greatness he can think of, instead of realizing there is greatness in the world, but it's outside of me, and it's a great thrill to be aware of it and to relate to it as outside of me, he has to make it part of himself. Whatever greatness there is has to be me. So he says, Ish kozeh lo yavo lidei chachma amita, such a person will never come to true chachma. I mean, there's so many statements of our sages about that a person who's a Balgaiva, God says, I and he can't exist in the same place. Because it's such a delusion. The whole idea of God, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is nullifying myself to him. If this person feels the only thing worthwhile in life is when I aggrandize myself, he's got a totally, he's on the turnpike going in the other, opposite direction from where he needs to go. He can't even taste the taste of true service of Hashem. The whole idea of true service of Hashem is nullifying my infinitesimally small self to his greatness. But here, this person thinks that the only meaning in life is building up myself. He destroys his soul from its primary characteristic. Like he spoke about much earlier in the Sefer, if you have a creature, a being that has a certain trait, and you don't allow it to exercise that trait, that's such a tragedy. So the soul wants to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the right way. If this person deludes himself in the thing that he has to build up himself, the soul is incarcerated. It can't do what it wants to do. Al kein ya'amol ha'odam l'hasig da'as emes. Therefore, man should toil to perceive and achieve and grasp true das. Ve'eino tomid al masha chaser mimena l'ashlamaso. His eye should always be on what he's lacking to bring himself to completion. Not to falsely make myself think I have what I don't have. To the contrary, I want to perceive what I don't have accurately. I want to know exactly what I'm missing. Ve'nafsho dveka ba'avas tzur olamim. And his soul should be clinging to the love of the Infinite One, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sha'kavod shalo, that true honor is only his. Ve'oz v'ched be'mekomo, might and true rejoicing is only in God's place. Ve'lo yavo la'olam lachshav al ma she'ein bo she'yesh bo. He should never think about something that he doesn't have in himself that he does. It should be anathema to him to think that I have a good quality that I don't have. The unav can't bear that. I don't want to have any delusion about myself. I don't want to attribute to myself. Chazal say, if they give him honor because they think he knows two mesechtas and he only knows one, he should correct it. He doesn't want any false notions about himself. Ki osher simchas amuvkeshes hatova amiti v'asagos hadeyas hatoros v'amidas hakdoshes lamitosa. Because the true joy in life is understanding the truth, the purity, that which is true and holy. By my imagination, if I can delude myself into thinking I'm greater than I am, it doesn't make me any greater. Rabbeinu Yonah has a famous comment in Pirkei Avos on kavod, on honor, on that mission of Ezehu Mechubot, who is honored when he honors others. He says, kavod is elusive. It's a false midah to begin with. If a person is truly honorable, then the fact that people honor him doesn't make him... It doesn't matter if he's truly honorable, whether he gets a standing ovation or not, he's honorable. And if he isn't, the standing ovation doesn't help. If he has it, he doesn't need it. And if he doesn't have it, it doesn't help. So getting honor, so the same thing with deluding myself into thinking I have it. So again, now he uses that terminology, which I'm not sure how exactly it's a proper metaphor, or maybe it means it is more of a metaphor. He only wants the tranquility. He doesn't want the noise. This Balgaiva needs the noise. He needs, but noise is all false. It's just a noise-making machine. We have to keep the baby asleep. We have one of these noise-makers. There's nothing there. There's no seagulls. But right. he presses the button and he thinks. But the Anuf doesn't want that. The Anuf taps into what's true. He doesn't want any noise that's being made by some computer. He wants the truth. Again, I'm going to paraphrase, but he says there's no tranquility except when things are true and accurately perceived. And then he says, the Anav and the Chacham has a broader mind. The Sachal has a narrow mind. In Sachal's narrow mind, if I'm lacking, if I'm small, then that's it. Life is just not worth living. And it's terrible. The person of a broader mind, I can be small, but at the same time, he can relish the greatness of the world around him, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu around him. I mean, just to give a mashal, like you take a little child and he can't get past. One of my little kids has to be older than everyone. So you stand next to a kid, even making sure he's taller and older. He can't get past that. That's that level of development. The sachal, greatness has to be me. It has to be in me. The chacham loves the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me existence. I'm a tiny creature, but look at the Chachma that he gave me an opportunity to experience and to see and to connect to him. It's him with a capital H. It's not me, but that he relishes that. The Sochel just can't get past that. He has this, and as Rav Kook says, it comes from the material side of man. In material things, we're much more conscious of ourselves. In material things, it's only me. If you eat, I don't feel full. In spiritual things, it's all connected. It's all unified. But in material things, it's not. The Balgaiva, the fool, he's so caught up in the material that even when he looks at things that are supposed to be higher than that, he thinks in those kind of terms. So anything that's not himself has no meaning. So it says Rav Kook, this is all part of Gaiva. It's a state of shikras. It's a false expansion of self, which is really the same as a drunken person rolling around in the gutter, and he thinks he's having a good time, says Rav Kook. So is Gaiva. It comes from just a delusion, and it's most unfortunate because of that, he never, just like a drunken person who never gets to develop himself in truth, so too the Baal Gaiva, his neshama, never gets to develop itself in connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it's in this state of delusion that it can't break free of. So humility is a central midah and a central first step in the service of Hashem. Okay, I think again, when he talks about noise and not noise, it's not 100% clear to me why he uses that terminology, but I'm fairly certain that the basic idea of what he said in those paragraphs, I think, Anias Daiti, I have accurately summarized. Let's go to page Ayin. Okay, so this is Dalit. Prate midas hagaiva v'akava b'dibur v'maisa. Details of the traits of haughtiness and honor in speech and in action. This is a fascinating idea. I think all these ideas are deep, but they're applicable, and we can think about them and relate to them. Bechlal ha-mitzvah shel iser ha-gaiva, included in the mitzvah, the command, meaning the negative command of haughtiness, hu lehisrachek mikol davar shema'orer is midosav utzchunasa l'gaiva. Included in that is anything that rouses his midos and his characteristics to haughtiness. Not only should I not be haughty, but anything that guides me in that direction is also forbidden. V'nira barur, and it seems to be clear, k'mo shematzinu, this is a beautiful concept, fascinating concept it talks about here, k'mo shematzinu nivel peh b'isurei arayos, just as in matters of morality, matters between men and women, there's such a thing as nivel peh, as we call it dirty speech, who davar shahaya bechlal v'yatza men haklal l'lamed al haklal kulo. He says that's really just an example. That's one of the midos that the Torah is darshan. Sometimes there's something that was included in a broader category and it was singled out, but it's singled out to tell you that really that detail applies to all of the other things in that category. So even if the Chazal, our sages, talk about nivel peh in one area, unbecoming speech in one area, he says it really applies to all negative midos. There's such a thing as nivel peh in every bad trait. Kihu hadin she'asa lintos b'diburav l'mashem o'ero l'chol dvar iser shekarav l'natiyah. He says it's the same thing. One is not allowed to stray in his speech to any type of speech that brings him toward any prohibition. It's usually spoken about in one area, but he says, but speech that leads to other sinful midos is also bad. It's also called nivel peh. Ukimo, he uses some abbreviations here, but ukimo she b'nivel peh al pi ma shekosav b'tzedek achos m'sil seshar. And just as, with regard to actual nivel peh, we use the term nivel peh when a person is talking shmutzik arayd, unbecoming, but usually means in matters of between men and women, but just as there the Mesilas Yesharim says she'ikar adin hu she'iser hu mitzad ervaso shel dibur ba'atzma, it's not only what it leads to. This is it's erva of speech. You know, per se, it's problematic. It's not only what it leads to; it itself, it's erva of speech. V'lo mitzad hargoshes hava also le'iser atzma. It's not only because it feels like the kind of thing that will bring him to sin. It itself is bad. He says, "Kein gam b'chol inyan dibur." So too with all matters of speech, shekafi hanoig hu ma'oras halev la'eza davar ra, that per people's conduct, this type of speech will rouse the heart to something bad. The way we talk ends up being the way we behave. Kemo l'gaiva v'chanupa v'chayotzebo, like to arrogance, or chanupa. Chanupa is when, we would translate it as flattery, but that's a bad translation. Chanupa means when you tell somebody what they want to hear, even though it's wrong, and it's giving honor to something that really should be deplored. So they use it, they translate it as flattery, but it's not only flattery, it's any time something, there's something here that probably should be protested, or at the very least shouldn't be encouraged, but then just to make this person happy, say, oh, that's wonderful, that's chanupa, it's an isser in the Torah, lo sachanifu asa'ar, it's, I'm not allowed to do that. So any type of speech, even if it isn't the prohibition per se, it's not arrogance per se, it's not chanupa per se, but it tends in that direction, it's prohibited per se. Okay? Even a person will say, I'm not concerned based on my nature. I can talk this way and not end up in the sinful mode of behavior. Nevertheless, it remains in its prohibition. Okay, this is already like lumdus. If you say that it's only prohibited because of what it leads to, then if a person knows he won't be led to that, then he's allowed to. But if you say that something that could lead to arrogance becomes per se a prohibition, then even if it doesn't lead him that way, but it has become a prohibition per se, and he may not do it, even if, what would be enough, Kamina? If a person, he knows he's going to die in 1 second, so is he allowed to do something that could lead him to a sin? Well, he's not going to get to do the sin because he's going to die anyway. The point is, he's saying it becomes prohibited per se. Okay, so now he says, "Rak l'chosid gadol ma'od to a very righteous person, shebemadregos hadoros hakadmonim, who is on the level of the much earlier generations, yesh lomar shehuter imroa tzarach sha'al lakach. Then we can say it is permissible if he sees a need for it at the time. Kedamrinan Barav Papa Pliga Diday Adiday. You can see in the footnotes of the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, the rabbis of the Gemara spoke about certain safeguards. Again, he's using the example of proper boundaries between men and women as a mushal to this. But in that area, there were Chacham who said, you're not allowed to do X. I think he's actually talking about kissing his sister. I don't remember what the Gemara was talking about, but that then he himself did it. Pliga didei adidei means, and he himself argues on himself because we have an instance where he did it. So how could it be? How can one of the rabbis of the Gemara be self-contradictory? Because when he made the statement, don't do this, he was talking to the general population. When he did it, it was a particular instance. He's above that tendency, and he saw a need. I don't remember exactly what it was in the Gemara there, but he saw a need in that instance to do this behavior because he's immune to the risks of it, and there was a positive reason to do it in that case. But he says it's only for people of the status of earlier generations. I think he's going to elaborate on that more. V'adayin tzarach iyun, 3 lines from the bottom on ayin, the matter still needs further investigation. Im hadavar muchlat, if the thing is absolutely clear, Sheulai Isure HaPeh Mitzad Etzem HaIsurheim. I think he's further dissecting this. The point ultimately is the same. One way to understand why I'm not allowed to speak this way is because it might lead me to the sin. Another way is to say that something that could lead to the sin, even though it's not included in it, but something that could lead to the sin per se becomes bad. To take it one step further, it's not only that it could lead to the sin, it is actually considered the sin. There are certain areas where speech itself is the sin. He's going to give examples. On Shabbos, there are certain type of speech that violates Shabbos. Okay, it says in the Navi Yishai, Chibarito me'asostor, we have a prohibition, you're not allowed to speak about certain business things on Shabbos. It's not only because if you do that, you may end up driving to work, and no, per se, that speech is a violation of Shabbos. He says in Arayos, it does seem that way from one place in the Gemara. He gives an example, Ube Masira. Masira is turning someone in. It's considered tantamount to murder, giving someone over that he could end up being killed. So even if a person just says they're after somebody, some bandits are after somebody, and I say he's over there. Not only is that a sin because I facilitated them getting it, it's as if I killed them. So there's some things where the speech itself is considered the prohibition. I mean, the whole idea of Masira, giving someone over, you're not killing him, but the halacha considers it if you kill him. That's why we have that halacha. If they come to a group of people and they say, give us so-and-so or we're going to kill you, we're not allowed to give over so-and-so. Why? I'm not killing so-and-so. I'm doing one step before that. But it's considered, Masira is considered murder per se. So there are some areas of halacha where you would think the sin is X and Y is just surrounding X, but no, Y becomes considered X. Speaking non-Shabbistic is a violation of Shabbos. It's not because it'll lead to, it is. Speaking in a way that gets someone, God forbid, in terrible trouble, what it's not called for, and so on, that is Masira. Masira is considered the sin itself. So Shahadibur Asa, the speech itself, is prohibited. Lukamokain Bavodah Zariah, the same thing with Avodah Zarah. Who iser atzmi, on top of Ayin Aleph. No, it is the prohibition itself. When we say that something is be'etzim, we mean it's not that it leads to it, it means it itself. Just like etzim means the bone, the core of something, it is itself the prohibition. V'yesh lama shehu adin b'chol ha'isurim. And one can say that it's really like that with all prohibitions. V'al koponim la'osam sha'adam notel hem b'tivu. Or at the very least, as sins that man has a tendency to, it could be speech about those things is considered part of the prohibition. Because in man's nature, this is already the sin. When he talks about it, it's like doing it. Nimtza. It thus turns out, Misha B'daber, so getting back to Gaiva, he was bringing that as background to get back to arrogant speech. Misha B'daber Dvarim Shiyavio Lidei Gaiva, a person who speaks the type of speech that brings him to arrogance, Yesh B'yodo Shnei Isurim, he has in his hand two prohibitions, Gaiva, Vinivel Peshel Gaiva. When it makes him arrogant, you know, he's sitting with some people and he starts, oh, you should know what I did. So first of all, he became arrogant. And secondly, the type of speech of arrogance, Nivel Peh, what he's calling Nivel Peh, profaning the mouth of arrogance. Vim Eino Mavio, and let's say it doesn't actually bring him to haughtiness, Al Kolpana Me'echad Lo Pala, he still hasn't escaped one of the prohibitions. Bad speech. Bad language of arrogance, he still did, even if he never became arrogant from it. Gam Giru Yetzahara Benafsho, also the starting up with the Yetzahara, meaning rousing the Yetzahara himself, Pshita, it's obvious, Shaloba Arayas Bolvad HaDavar. See, our sages talk about these concepts in certain areas, but he's saying it's not only in that area, it's in any area. Our sages have to talk about in one area that he's paraphrasing that right now. A person who rouses himself to prohibition, so God will not allow him into his machitza. It's like Hashem says, you're not in the same fence as me. So says Rav Kook, that's not only in that particular area that the sages were talking about, it's in everything. Because this is particularly anathema or abominable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The person was in a state of tranquility, wasn't in any kind of Yetzihara state. And then he deliberately got himself worked up into Yetzihara. That's deplorable. It's one thing if suddenly he was in the throes, the Yetzihara got a stranglehold around me. It's one thing. But if I was in a state of tranquility, I was free of the Yetzihara, and I said, I'm bored. How could I... So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes particularly strong response to that. Says Rav Kook, it's not only with the example that Chazal were talking about, it's in anything. So here I am, I'm sitting, some people here, and I start talking about how great I am, and I'm bringing myself toward Gaiva. He says that's the same thing. How strong the criticism of the person might be per the level of the bad that results from his speech. Some sins are worse than others. Amnam, however, in b'makom dvar mitzvah tzarech ledaber dvarim shenirim kegaiva, if in the case of a mitzvah he has to speak things that appear like haughtiness, mutar mitzad klola da asei docha los asei. It is permissible because of the rule that a positive commandment overrides a negative. Interesting, it still needs that mechanism. There's really something bad here, but it's an instance where the positive outweighs the negative.
Could you give us an example of when that would be?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to quote some from the Gemara. There are places in the Gemara where some of the great Chachamim, and really even in the Mishnah, where some great Chachamim said things that sound like arrogant statements about themselves. And he's going to explain that they were trying to teach you what a Midah truly is. I think he quotes on the next page, the Gemara, at the very end of Masechah Sota, people had said, when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi died, there was no more humility. When someone else died, I don't remember whom, there was no more fear of sin. So the rabbis, one of the rabbis of the Gemara says, don't say there was no more humility because I'm still alive. Which, when you first hear it, sounds like the ultimate ironic statement, but it's not meant as a joke at all. It says, Rav Kook, so we don't relate to that because the Chachamim, the people, the Yishai HaTanach and the Chachamim, the Mishnah, the Gemara, were living Torah. They were living manifestations of Torah. It's very hard to imagine such a level, but the Torah is the guidebook to man's behavior, and these were people who literally were exactly what the Torah is talking about. And when he says, I want you to understand, this is what humility means. Less than this is already outside of humility, but he's teaching us something about the Midah. It did not come from any place of haughtiness. I think I've mentioned this story. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky heard this story from Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam. It's recorded in one of the Svarim. Naftali Amsterdam was one of the three main disciples of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, as we've mentioned. So on Purim, the Talmidim in Slabodka used to go to hear Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam talk, and he told the story when there was the cholera epidemic in the 1840s, I think it was 1849, and there was a big question whether people should fast on Yom Kippur or not. And medically, people were a little bit more susceptible to the illness if they were fasting. So the Rabbanim, I think in Vilna, had Paskin, you have to fast. If somebody's sick, that's something else, but you have to fast. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter held, nobody's allowed to fast. And he got up and he made Kiddush, which by the way is a Kiddush, because even one who eats in Yom Kippur, we usually say not to make Kiddush, but he made Kiddush in Shul. Kiddush today is sponsored by the Salanter family. enjoy the, so it was Yom Kippur and he made Kiddush in Shul. He was summoned by the Beis Din. They said, how dare you, we're the Beis Din here, and we ruled not that way. And this, I mean, this is a fascinating story, but Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, whose whole life was about avoiding awareness of his greatness, and he was successful because people don't even know much of his Torah. We know the Musar movement, people don't recognize it, what a luminary he was. But in this instance, he said to the Beis Din, let me tell you something. I know how you carry out the gittin in this town. It's based on the sheet of the Beis Shmuel and Ebenezer. Let me tell you something. I have a kasha on that Beis Shmuel. I promise you can't answer. And I'm going to show you that all the gittin in town are puzzle, unless you back off. That was the end of the story. It seems so out of character, but in that instance, apparently, I'm only telling the story the way I read it. In that instance, it seems like he felt there was a need to do this, and you need to show some gadol muscle, and he did so. It's one of these don't try this at home type of things, or Cook said it's for unique individuals, but there can be a case where it's necessary. But what Rav Cook is trying to emphasize is so much the point on the opposite. But really, even speech that leads to arrogance is prohibited. It's nivel peh, he's using the term, it's nivel peh. It's a strong word. Yeah, so in a case where necessary, so asay docha, let's just say, last four lines in the first paragraph of 9-11, tahainu, that is, kishiyagish ba'atma she'yefshelo b'shum ofen she'yavo tikkun anirtzelo. When he feels there's no way to reach the tikkun, the state of things being the way they're supposed to be, that's needed for him, ki yimal yidei dvarav ela, except by these words, which again, in that story, I think that was the case, oz mechuyivhu, just remembering, I had a friend in yeshiva who went to speak to our Rosh Yeshiva of Zelig Epstein about something. He never told me exactly what it was, but he told me over this story that he had been involved in it. He had sought professional help in something, and the woman, the professional, had told him to do X, and he spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva about it. And by the way, Zelig Epstein certainly held it the place where professionals understand things better, and that's certainly the case. But he spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva about it, and the Rosh Yeshiva told him, don't do that, do like this. And then he said, and I want you to understand, I'm not saying that because I know how to learn Tosfos better than her. I'm saying that because I understand the situation better than her. Because he didn't want him to think that was some kind of hocus pocus, you know, but he doesn't really. So in other words, in order for his message to be understood and taken to heart, he had to say, I know better than the person you're talking to. So sometimes it can be necessary. He felt if he wouldn't say that, he wouldn't listen. He'd think, oh, he doesn't understand. So if a person has to speak arrogant speech, or speech that's in this category of leading toward arrogance, what he has to be careful is, okay, so say it, but don't let it bring you to actual haughtiness. Yisrael Salanter said of himself, whether they honor me with the greatest accolades or they deride me in the worst of terms, I feel the same. It doesn't, I mean, that's so above, anybody who's ever experienced denigration, we're so far from that. It's so painful and so terrible. And with all the humility, we do like it when people say how wonderful we are, but we're so, it's what they call midas hashtavos. When a person has mastered himself, that he doesn't relate to covet at all, doesn't really, he's just doing what's right. So a person who's at that level, when necessary, carefully, can say something that really would be in the category of this speech of arrogance, but being very careful that it shouldn't lead to actual arrogance. You'll see in a second he's going to suggest that it's almost impossible to do that. The branch, meaning this is a branch of arrogance, because it's not arrogance itself, it's speech of arrogance, is pushed off, is overridden by the what branches out in a positive sense. Next paragraph, ubachlal isuri hagaiva, included in the prohibition of arrogance, shadibur hagaiva asr afal pishenu mevi lagaiva. This idea that it's forbidden even where it doesn't bring to arrogance, he seems to be a little bit on the fence as to whether it is or it isn't. So he says, kein muchach misugi deperak elu dvarim v'psachim. This seems clearly proven from a gemara in Psachim, Damrinan, that we say, me hillel udvora shakol hamisyar im chacham hu chachmasa mistalekas vimenu im navi hu nevuasa mistalekas vimenu. The Gemara says, anybody who shows haughtiness, if he's a chacham, his wisdom leaves him. If he's a navi, his prophecy leaves him. Where from? From a story with Hillel in the time of the Chazal, and a story of Dvora in the time of the Nevi'im. There's a famous story in the Gemara that the Nesi'im at the time, the B'nai B'Seira, didn't know a certain halacha. They didn't know what's the halacha if Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. Do you bring the Karban Pesach or not? A whole complicated discussion how they didn't know that, because it happens periodically. And they didn't know the answer, and Hillel knew the answer. And they humbly stepped down. They said, okay, you take over. But the Gemara continues and says, Hillel, he teased them, he shepherded them. So the Mepharshim say he did it for a reason, to get them to be more driven in their learning. Why did I know this and not you? But it sounds like something haughty, and because of that, he forgot something. So his chachma left him. Devora, in her song, says, Ad shakamti Devora. The world was in a state of disarray until I arose, Devora hanaviyah. It says, Rav Kook, v'harei rak dvarim hayu. There's no question; those were just words. V'ein ro'i lochush shetzadikim ka'ela ba'u l'gaiva bilvavam. It is not appropriate to suspect, to be concerned, that such righteous people, Hillel and Devora Hanaviyah, actually came to haughtiness. Rav Kook says, I am certain they didn't actually become haughty because they said those things. Umikocha dibur, or that they spoke from the power of haughtiness. No way. Ela she'etzam hadibur hu b'chlal ha'iser. Rather, what we have to say is, this is a proof that haughty speech, even if it doesn't lead to haughtiness, is prohibited, even where it will not lead to anything. But then he says, oh, yosar karav loma, but it seems more likely to say, shelifnei yodea talumos, that before the one to whom all secrets are revealed, that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, goloi, it is revealed, she'efshar she'edaber divrei gaiva, v'lo yavo lo ma'at meha ma'at al kol ponim. He says, you know what I think is the more correct explanation? That it's impossible for a human being, as great as he or she may be, to speak arrogant words and not to have a tiny vestige of arrogance actually enter him. Yeah. Even though we wouldn't perceive it. We would not perceive any haughtiness in Devarah Nevi'ah and Hillel. But he says, so he's giving two possibilities. Either it's prohibited even when it won't bring you to haughtiness because it's so abominable that even the speech about arrogance is prohibited. Or more likely, he says, the real reason why it's prohibited is because it brings a trace, a tiny, tiny trace of haughtiness. V'hu asur b'mashahu. And haughtiness is prohibited even in the slightest trace. Isur mashahu is the term we use on Pesach. All year long, if a tiny bit of non-kosher falls into something that's kosher, or a tiny, tiny drop of milk like somehow got into something fleshig, so we say it's batal. The rabbi says, well, how much were you cooking in the pot at the time? Oh, it was full and it was only dry. Okay, don't worry about it, it's batal. It was more than 60 times its volume, it's nullified. But on Pesach, we have this isur mashahu. If you're cooking a pot of soup that's 200 gallons, and you drop in a crumb this big, to the degree that there are even responsa who ask why in Israel you're allowed to drink water if your water comes from the Kinneret, who says that somebody didn't throw in a crumb of challah on Pesach? There's an answer to that. But the fact that they asked that question shows you what an Isser Mashahu. Isser Mashahu means even the slightest amount is prohibited. So haughtiness is a midah which is prohibited even in the slightest amount. There is a footnote here. Footnote Yudches, I have to say the footnotes are astounding, very great insights. Sometimes he's just telling you the Gemara that he's paraphrasing, but sometimes it really gives you a fascinating source. It says, Ayin Igros, look at the letters of Rav Kook, Igeres Samaches, which is from the 12th of Tishrei in 1916, almost 100 years ago. I'll tell you what happened here. Let me tell you a little story. I have the Igros Haraya, the Rav Kook's letters, the way it's currently published. So I went looking, they are printed in the order in which he wrote them, so they're by date. So I looked, there was none from the 12th of Tishrei, there was one from the 13th of Tishrei, and it was all about humility. But it wasn't number 68, Samaches. So I said, this is too much of a coincidence, it's about humility, it was from the next day. Must be some kind of a typo here, even though it was numbered Tufshin Mem Aleph, which is 741, not 68, not clear how you get such a typo. But anyway, it was about humility. I figured it must be it. I learned it through. It was a fascinating letter. I was going to talk to you about it. But then I said, you know what? Maybe there was an older printing of the letters. So, Baruch Hashem for HebrewBooks.org. And in the earlier printing of the letters of Rav Kook, there's a letter that I don't think we have because it's from the day before and it's not in the newer printing. But that's the letter he's actually talking about. So I was zocha to learn something about humility, which was fascinating. It was all about how, but it was not the letter he's referring to. The letter he is referring to is this one. And it's an amazing thing. I don't know who it's to, it doesn't say. But he says, in response to your letter, which is full of wisdom and extreme humility, and then in parentheses, and he writes, and you have the real extreme humility as per the following. This is all a parenthesis. It goes on for a paragraph, but it's a fascinating piece. He actually asks a question. There's a contradiction in Rambam, the Gemara Maseches Sota, on Daf Hey. We have different chachamim who talk about humility and haughtiness, and the first of the Chacham says a person should have an eighth of an eighth of haughtiness, 64th haughtiness. And another Chacham says, Deshamta de ispe, Deshamta de lespe. One who has haughtiness means he has it in big measure. Beshamta, it's like he should be excommunicated. But Beshamta de lespe, but one who has it doesn't have it at all, also no good. He should also be excommunicated. Apparently also saying you need to have a little bit. And there's another statement that also seems along these lines. I'm forgetting what it is right now. Then, one of the other Chachamim, I think he quotes it, one of the other Chachamim says, is it a small thing what Hashem says, Tov as Hashem kol gvalev, abominable to God, is anyone of arrogant, of haughty heart? He seems to be saying you shouldn't have any haughtiness. It seems like we have three Chachamim all saying you should have a little bit, you have to have at least some, has to be some pride there. And the last one saying, no, not at all. Lo mi no ve lo mektasa, not from it, not from any bit of it. That's what he says. And he quotes that the problem is then you look in the Rambam and he seems to quote both statements together. He says, you have to be exceedingly humble, and even though we usually go in the middle of the road. This is the Rambam in the second chapter of Hilchos Deos, where he talks about usually a person should be in the middle, shouldn't be exceedingly loose with his money, but shouldn't be exceedingly frugal and so on. But then he says, but in humility, you have to go to the extreme. And then he says, as our sages said, one who has it is excommunicated. And they said you shouldn't have it at all. The problem is the first statement he's quoting also said you should have a little bit. And then he quotes a statement that says you shouldn't have any. And he seems to have mixed them together. So Rav Kook says the Rambam learned it differently. He has a brilliant explanation based on the Gemara and Yuma. It's talking about something totally different, talking about Chatzi Shir on Yom Kippur. Not only can you not eat the volume of a large date, that's the volume of food that you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, but if you eat half of that, it's called Chatzi Shir. It's half the amount, and that's also prohibited from the Torah, just not with the same punishment. Oh, lamdash discussion of Chatzi Shir. He shows the way that our sages derive things from the Psukim, that what that Leis Chacham meant is, yes, you have to have a little tiny bit, but it has to be mixed into other things. If you have haughtiness that's an eighth of an eighth that stands alone, no good. If you take the haughtiness and you stick it into your humility, so now, then it's okay. Then the haughtiness becomes part of the humility, just as many poskim say, when you take non-kosher and you mix it a tiny bit, and you mix it, not deliberately, you're not supposed to do this, but if it gets mixed into the kosher, it becomes kosher itself. That's why you're allowed to eat the whole soup. Even the non-kosher became kosher. He says with the Rambam, the way the Rambam understood the Gemara is there's no machlokas there. So even though we have these statements that say you should have an eighth of an eighth, you have to have a little bit, the last statement wasn't arguing. It was saying, yeah, how should you have that little bit? Only if it's drowned in humility. Have that little bit of haughtiness drowned in humility. What exactly that means, I'm going to have to think about for a few weeks, but that's what he's talking about in that letter. So it's fascinating when he writes, "V'hu asur b'mashahu." Haughtiness is so dangerous, he can't even have a little bit. So in the footnote, he says, and look at my father's letter, where he shows you that, yeah, everybody agrees you can't really have a little bit of haughtiness, because those who say you should have a little bit mean when it's mixed in with the humility. That's the only way it's permissible. He says, "Al kolponim eich sheyia hadibur asur." However it is, the speech is prohibited. Either it's prohibited because per se, or it's prohibited because you don't realize it, but when you speak arrogantly, it will bring you to the tiniest bit of arrogance, even if we simple people wouldn't even see it. So v'nimtza, thus turns out, shesipur shivchei atzmo malosav. Telling over, sipur means telling a story, the retelling of the praises of himself and his milos, his greatness, bein binyani Torah v'chachma v'chol milo tova, whether in matters of Torah and wisdom or anything, Asur mitzad etzem iser gaiva. It's prohibited because of gaiva, arrogance. Velo hutar, and it's not prohibited. Kiyim lachasid gadol, but to a very righteous person. B'makom tzarech gadol, in the case of great need. Kidehutra kreva b'chaygavn v'mitzvah lachasid gadol. Again, he keeps using analogies to matters of arayos. We have an example. The Gemara tells something interesting, and the Gemara is about Ketzad Meraktim Lifnei Akala. One of the Chacham put the Kala on his shoulders. Don't try this today. It says Kidahu Kadisha, like that holy one. And then the footnote, he shows you why the Chacham are called holy ones based on a different Gemara. To have a Markiv La Akaspe, who had her riding on his shoulders. But Amr, they asked her, is that permissible? And they said Idam Yalaicha Kikashur Lachi V'Yalala. Basically, if you're at my level, it means if she's like a beam to you and there's no desire at all, then it'd be permissible, but it's not for regular people. That's the point of it. Why he felt it necessary, I don't know, part of Simchas Chasim Nikal, I'm sure it attracted attention, but he's using that as an example, as a mushal. Similarly with other areas where we have things that one is not allowed to do, either because they might bring to the Isser, or because of that they are called the Isser per se. The exceptions are only for very great people in very rare circumstances. Right, maybe we'll read the rest of it next time, but Eve, you had asked for examples. Here he gives the examples with regard to haughtiness. There are statements that different Chachamim made. There was a statement by Shimon Bar Yochai about his greatness. When you just read it, it's hard to understand why he would say such a thing, but he's teaching us Torah. People who are Torah, so what they say about themselves, it's not about themselves, it's about Torah per se. We're not at that level, so therefore we don't have these heterim. But the point of it all is that gaiva is such a bad trait and it's so antithetical to what we're pursuing that we have safeguards around it. Not only arrogance per se, but even arrogant speech that feels like it's devoid of any feeling of speech, he says, Rav Kook, it should be avoided. That was a great shiur, wasn't it? No.
Yes. Yes.
That was a joke.
It was, of course.
But anyway, so we'll continue with that next time. Interestingly, by the way, in the letter that I stumbled upon because I misunderstood the footnote. He's talking about how chiddush, experiencing new understanding in Torah about Hashem's world, comes from humility. He says any real, and this is probably based on Kabbalah, but any real new thing comes from the entirety of what precedes it. A fruit doesn't come from the stem that it's growing on, comes from the whole tree. The new fruit comes from the whole tree and the roots and the xylem and the phloem, it comes from everything. He says so true in the spiritual world. Newness, chiddush, if it just comes from what immediately precedes it, he says that's just a mechanical. That's not real chiddush. That's not real freshness. Real freshness. And he says that's why our sages talk about that a person who learns Torah Lishma becomes a Mayan HaMisgaver, becomes like an endless source. You see these great chachamim, they just have one new idea or two. They brought out things, chachma and Torah, that it seemed like they were an endless flowing stream because they tapped into the whole source. And he says in order to do that, that comes from aniva, it comes from humility, it comes from nullifying oneself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what he was talking about in that letter. It's a nice point in its own right. It wasn't the one that he was referring to in this one, but it's another point about humility that I thought was worthy of mention. Okay, we'll continue next time.